These Days.
Kids These Days.
This is Kids These Days.
Today we're talking about how to approach speaking to your kids about sex and sexuality. It's often assumed that bringing the subject up with kids can be trying for the adults who love them. But it's also a very important conversation in today's world, where sexual images are everywhere and kids are maturing ever faster. Today I'm in the studio with Alaska experts discussing normal sexual development and how to best deal with kids when it comes to talking about sex. Also this hour, we learn about resources for reproductive care and explore efforts to prevent domestic violence. Plus, we'll hear the voices of kids themselves and find out what teens think about sex these days. That and more this hour. Stay with us. Hi, I'm Kathleen McCoy, filling in for Shanna Sheehy today. As always on this program, we invite you to be a part of the ongoing conversation that happens online all the time. Find us on Facebook and let us know what you think there. Or send us a question or comment to mail@kidsthesedays.org. We do our best to make this the place where meaningful conversations about youth and family life start, but you keep them going. And now, to get the hour going, I'll introduce today's guests. Katherine Huffman has a Master's of Arts in Teaching, and she provides trainings for educators, nurses, counselors, and child care providers on sexuality and the educational, clinical, and parenting strategies that celebrate and support healthy sexual development. She is a sexuality educator and trainer for various organizations. She's a certified instructor for the Comprehensive Sexuality Education Program, OWL, Our Whole Lives, which we'll discuss more later on this hour. Katherine is a certified facilitator for the Teen Outreach Program, Youth Development Model. She is a frequent guest speaker in area schools and social service organizations. Currently, she's preparing parent workshops designed to increase parents' comfort, sharing their values about sexual health and other sensitive issues with their children. Chris Reynolds is a licensed professional counselor with a master's degree in counseling psychology from Alaska Pacific University. He's in private practice in Anchorage, where he specializes in the area of adjustment, couple therapy, and sex therapy. He has postgraduate training in the area of human sexuality and is one of two certified sex therapists in Alaska. Chris is the father of two teenage girls and has provided foster care to teens in the past. He's on the Health Education Curriculum Committee at the Anchorage School District. So welcome to you both.
Thank you.
So Katherine, let's start with you. That's quite a bio there. How did you get involved in this work? What drew you to it?
Well, it was a little circuitous. I mean, I got my master's degree in teaching from APU, and I was all set to head into a teaching career in sort of the traditional way we might think of that. And I learned that wasn't the match that I was looking for, and sought a health education position with Planned Parenthood here in Anchorage, and really recognized that the values of replacing fear with facts and misinformation with education really matched my own feelings about things. So really, the sexuality education piece is something I've been learning on the job in trainings and by being a support for others for the last 13 years.
And Chris, how about you? How did sexuality become your area of expertise?
Well, I think as a therapist, the subject of sexuality comes up very often, and I had a case a number of years ago in which I needed to get some supervision, some extra outside information, which is often the case in therapy, and I went to the matriarch of sex therapy in Alaska at the time, Ellen Cole. She no longer lives here in Alaska, but she actually recruited me into the work, but once I started doing it, I've always described it as the most productive and rewarding clinical work I've ever done.
Why is that?
People usually come to therapy, sex therapy in particular, motivated and wanting to change their lives for the better. And yet, most of us have grown up in a culture of lack of sexual sophistication. And I really find that once people are able to gain some of the emotional, cognitive, communication skills that allows them to manifest healthy sexuality, it's just such a tremendously rewarding thing for people.
Hmm. And is it something that parents have fear about, Catherine?
Definitely. I think that the lack of sexual sophistication that Chris coined, I really see that. I describe it in a different way because one of the things we do in parent workshops and teacher workshops and other sort of professional training kinds of scenarios is that we talk about the kind of learning that we had growing up. And it is really rare in all the people I've talked to about this to really feel like they had a solid, supportive level of information that they needed to navigate through their teen years and into their young adult lives. And so we're sort of burdened by that lack of information in general as a culture, not for every single person, but that really impacts how then you're able to support the young people in your world.
So if parents, you know, if can listeners can hear this and say, okay, I'm not the only one, but then what's the next step for parents to begin to feel comfortable? Is there something they do before they begin the conversation?
You know, it gets back to that old adage that we can only help others in ways that we've helped ourselves, or we can only teach others in ways that we've taught ourselves. And so I think part of that answer is, yeah, people can do the personal work on their side of the parenting relationship to be able to build that sophistication, to be able to build the ability to have a complex conversation or a complex orientation to sexuality. But it's important that parents don't wait for that feeling before they get involved.
It can't be perfect before you go forward.
It will never be perfect.
Right.
So stumble in, you say? Mm-hmm. Go ahead and stumble in, parents.
You know what? I think a big message around that is that it's not rocket science. We all have information about sexuality from our own experiences, from our own learnings. Some of it was helpful. Some of it was not so helpful. But we all have a sexual script that that possibly can help us have conversations.
A sexual script. That's an interesting idea.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So I like remembering, I said it's not rocket science, and I love that because it's really about remembering that you just being there, staying calm, opening the conversation in any way you can is so helpful. And you can even, you don't have to know everything. You don't have to have, in fact, we don't recommend having a big, huge sit down, serious
formalized
lecture thing.
Moment.
We hear from teens that they really don't appreciate that. But on the same note, Alaska teens in particular cite over and over again that the number one resource where their preferred resource for sexual health information is their parents, even if they don't look like that is their feeling.
They don't look happy having the talk.
Right.
Well, given that teens might present an unwillingness to have this talk, should a parent find a way to be taking a walk with them instead and then bring it up there? Or what recommendations do you have for parents when they feel it's time to have the talk?
Well, I think the first thing is riding on the back of what you said, Catherine, is that it's helpful to distance ourselves from the idea of the talk, of the idea of the big birds and the bees, sit down, let's discuss this. You know, usually that's traumatic for the kids, it's traumatic for the parents, it's just anxiety building. And so if we can distance ourselves from that being the objective, I think that's one of the helpful things. You know, I like to talk about the possibility of bringing this subject, sexuality. You know, for most people, it's stored in those two little cabinets above the refrigerator. And every once in a while, we go there and we open the magic doors and we bring it down. It's this special occasion. But if we think about it in terms of bringing it out of those cupboards and putting it right next to the fruit bowl on the counter where we run into it every day and we see it every day, that changes the complexion of this conversation.
I see.
Now it's a part of the fabric of our everyday lives. And when we start to think about it that way, the opportunities are everywhere.
Give me some examples. That's really helpful.
Oh, any TV show that you see has an example of sexuality in it. When you walk,
you couldn't avoid it.
You cannot avoid it.
Yeah.
When you walk through the checkout market or the checkout line at the supermarket, there are examples of sexuality really inundating us. The problem with these examples or these opportunities is that they all, or most of them, are a component of erotic sexuality, which we're overstimulated with in our society. But it's still an opportunity to address the dozen other aspects of sexuality that are out there. It's still a door that's open for us.
Thanks, Chris. Mm-hmm. This week on Kids These Days, we're talking about normal sexual development for kids. I'm Kathleen McCoy, and today we're joined by Catherine Huffman and Chris Reynolds. So the drift I'm getting from that is really little moments so that the big moment really isn't such a big moment.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And kids are used to hearing their parents talk about these touchy topics.
Right. The teens who have are able to avoid early sex and to use contraception when they do become sexually active, those teens are likely the ones where there is no taboo subject in the home. Mm. Where they've been able to bring up even their scariest feelings or most outrageous risk-taking that they've done. And while a parent's immediate response to a crisis like that, like something big happening, they might be at odds on how to react to that. But what we recommend is to always create an atmosphere where it's okay to ask those questions. You can say, oh, I'm angry about that, or I'm confused about what you just said, but you are so important to me, and this has to do with your health and your whole life. Let's talk tomorrow when we're both calmer about it. So you can have your human anger and your human confusion and lack of knowledge, and you can just put it out there and be an honest parent, but then to keep the door open so that that conversation gets revisited in whatever awkward fashion, perhaps it might happen. What you're communicating is you love your teen no matter what they do. Their behaviors may bother you, but that you will be there for them.
Right, right. You know, we've been talking about teens, but really this is a conversation that begins long before you have a teenager. Am I right?
Absolutely.
Let's talk about the appropriate time for the conversation, or the ways, not the conversation, as you said, Chris and Catherine, but more like, when can you start talking about sex with a child?
Kathleen, I'm glad you brought that up, because it speaks to the definition of sexuality. When we talk about sexuality education, and when we talk about conversing with our kids about sexuality, most people associate that word with specific sex acts. But really, when we use the word sexuality, we're really referring to a very broad definition. It includes aspects of gender. It includes aspects of how I feel about my body, how I feel about your body, what I do with the feelings that come up around about how I feel about those things. And so it's really a very broad conversation. And if we think of it in that way, we can start talking to our kids about the big definition sexuality as soon as we start talking to our kids.
Right, right. So it's a long-term conversation that happens over time. But we've got a great opportunity to hear from some teens today, so I'm going to leap back into the teen years here briefly. It seems fitting that this show should include the voices of some Alaska teenagers, so we asked our young colleagues at the Alaska Teen Media Institute to help us out with that. Kelsey Hernandez recently asked her peers about their attitudes towards sex and sexuality. Here's what they told her.
I am 17.
I'm 17.
I am 16.
I'm 17.
16.
17.
I'm 16.
I'm 16.
What do you think about teenagers having sex?
I think it's something they're going to do whether they think it's right or not. It just happens.
I think it's perfectly okay as long as you're safe.
I think it's actually okay, because really, sex is a normal part of life. in the animal kingdom, it's no big deal. It's only after we make it a big deal, after we put our own values to it, that it becomes a big deal.
I think that teenagers shouldn't have sex because we're too young to fully understand the negatives of sex, like babies, STDs, everything. And I don't think teenagers really have time for sex with school and sports and everything, so it's not like, it's not really worth it.
I think everyone does it, so it's not that bad of a thing.
I think teenagers having sex is more of their choice, although it's really distressing that they're having sex at this age because most of them have unprotected sex, which then leads to pregnancy, STDs, and all of those other problems that teenagers need to juggle along with schooling.
I think it's kind of just not good, just bad.
I think it's awesome.
For me, I think that it's completely all right if both of the parties know that they're in love. I mean, sometimes sex is all right without love, but I think that sex is the biggest showing of love that two people can ever share.
What factors should determine the right time to begin a sexual relationship with someone?
When both partners are ready.
I prefer marriage because it's how I was raised. But like, how should I put this? Love. Because if there's no love there, then it's just meaningless.
If you're both like fully committed to the relationship and you're not like fooling around with anyone else, then I think you're good.
Marriage is a good time to begin a sexual relationship because then you've already made that commitment to be with that person as well as committed to go through everything with them.
When they both say, I love you and mean it, and when they're smart enough to use a condom, and when they have a good place to do it other than like the backseat of a car or something like that, you know, an apartment or somewhere safe.
Both parties should consider the fact that there might be a child coming out of this. I mean, no matter how many precautions you take, there's still that option there, and that both people should discuss what would happen if she got pregnant. Would they keep it? Would they have an abortion? Would they have it adopted? Those sort of things are what they need to talk about. Because, you know, when you're having sex, you are like agreeing to create a child, even if you are having birth control and those sort of things.
All depends on your values, your beliefs, and just in general, your maturity.
If you truly love them and both people are absolutely ready.
How do you know if the other person's ready?
You talk to them about it. Can't be scared to talk to them about it.
Do you think teenagers today are smart about having sex?
Most of them, no. Because they make the decision to go without condoms and other things for protection. And they also don't do the research in order to make it so that they're not spreading STDs.
I think it just depends on the kids, so 50-50. Some people, just depends on their education, their sex education.
I don't think so. I think there's a lot of drinking and having sex, or just casual sex, or just doing it just to do it. Because, oh, we're dating now, we should just have sex.
Not really, no, because that's why there's so many with STDs, so many pregnancies, because they don't understand the simple concept of putting a condom on.
I think a lot of kids are. I know that I am and my friends are. I think that most people know birth control, condoms, spermicide, all those things. I think that the school district is doing a pretty good job of educating people that not just forcing abstinence down our throats, because that's really not gonna work.
I think in general, teenagers have gotten smarter about it, but there are so many barriers that they have to get over from because of all the cultural and social beliefs that are behind it.
I think it depends on the environment that they grow up in. Because, like, if they're around, like, young kids getting pregnant a lot, then that's going to happen to them. But if they grow up somewhere where they're, like, given all the facts and all that, then they're going to be smart about it.
If you have questions about sex, who do you feel most comfortable talking to?
I feel most comfortable talking to my dad, mostly. He's always the more level-headed person, but if not, siblings are always a good option, too.
My sister, or a few really close friends, but mostly my sister. She's more experienced.
My close friends, like two best friends. I wouldn't go to my parents or anything like that.
My girlfriend's mom. She is the easiest person to talk to in the world. She's understanding.
No one. I figure it out on my own.
I usually turn to my parents, and if my parents can't help me, then I usually turn to a physician because they know a lot more than most people think.
I really feel comfortable talking with generally my friends, but really there isn't all that many adults that I'm comfortable talking to. Definitely not my parents. I would definitely say other teenagers who talk about it, and maybe some teachers, like my sex ed teacher.
Usually my mom, because she's wise enough, and she knows I'm at that age where I will have questions, so it's not really awkward to talk about.
Kelsey Hernandez spoke to students at East High School in Anchorage. The Alaska Teen Media Institute is a spirit of youth program that helps young people tell their own stories through their own voices. Find out more about them by linking to their online work through our website, kidsthesedays.org. So Chris and Catherine, that was a lot of food for thought. Would you agree with me?
Absolutely.
Let's get some reactions to what you just listened to.
Well, I just want to appreciate that glimpse into teens' real feelings about sex and relationships. It's a real gift to be able to hear those voices. We talk about what we think they think a lot, you know.
But so here they are.
Yeah, it's really wonderful. And I just want to express my respect for that. And I believe that those teens they have rights around sexuality and that they can be responsible. I hear so many different things about values and sort of negotiating what's right and what's wrong and judgment. And as a parent, doesn't it just seem so ripe for conversation? Oh, all of those questions. And so I wanted to note that. And then I just wanted to tag on to there's some negative pieces around how teens are acting and whether it's responsible or not. And I just want to cite some good news.
Okay.
So the nationally, the average age of first sex is around 17. Now, and that has increased over the years, so that we consider that sort of a positive thing, you know, to delay early sex. The earlier sex is, the more likely it's forced, coerced, or there's drugs and alcohol involved, or the partner is much older, and so the power dynamic is not healthy. And so there's some good things about that. Also, the age of first child in the U.S. is about 25, and so we know people do use contraception effectively. And so I was just hearing some messages about how people don't use that very well, but condoms work very well. Birth control works very well if used consistently and accurately. So we see that in the numbers.
The numbers show that, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, more specifically around Alaska data, the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, so that last came out a couple years ago. It's weighted data that looks at school districts across Alaska, and we see a similar result. So we see an increase in the age of first sex, so that is getting a little bit later, a few percentage points. It's right around 46% of high school kids on average report having had sex. So,
and I thought that was a high number, but apparently not.
Well, we're also averaging out 9th through 12th grade, so it's a little bit different picture when you're looking at 9th graders first versus
12th graders.
12th graders, mm-hmm. right. Mm-hmm. And we're also seeing an increase in condom and birth control use. But when you average things out, you miss the opportunity to note some real concerning pieces. For example, very young teens reporting having had sex, for example, prior to age 13, has increased. Mm-hmm. So there's some pieces around that we really need to take a look at.
Right. Chris, I wanted to give you a chance to react to those student voices that we just heard.
Well, I thought Kelsey did a great job of giving her peers a voice. And it's the piece about sexuality education that is the most critical. We talk about education as if it's a flow of information from parent to child, but the most critical component of that process is the flow of information from child to parent. And we have to be very good listeners to understand what our kids are going through, what's meaningful for them, what's pertinent for them, before we can exercise our right to be educators.
We wish that they could and would be as outspoken with their parents maybe as they are to a teen reporter. You know, the studies that we look at show that teens who do talk to their parents come to it later in life. They use condoms when they do have sex. Mm-hmm. It's encouraging. But when you look at the numbers of teens who are having sex at a young age or even a little older age, it would suggest that our culture is really struggling. The parents of these children are really struggling still. Mm-hmm. Although there were some great examples of choosing people to talk to.
The wording of Kelsey's question was really interesting. She said, who do you feel most comfortable talking with? And the answer to that was varied. Sometimes it was the parent, sometimes it was the peer. We know that if we change the wording of that question a little bit to who is the biggest influence on your sexual behavior, overwhelmingly the teens tell us it's their parents. Mm-hmm. And so what that suggests to me is that we as parents have a large vote in the mm-hmm. sexuality of our children, but that sometimes we don't show up to the bowl.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's not just what you say, it's what you do and how you act. How do you talk about your own body? How do you behave in your own relationship with your parenting partner, perhaps, or your dating person or your spouse? So the kids are all picking up much more information, likely, from those kinds of things that they witness than perhaps the things that you say explicitly.
Kids These Days is a weekly conversation about issues that matter to all of us when we're raising kids these days. Today we're talking about the talk, the sex talk, and about what normal sexual development and exploration is for young people. What are you wondering about? Let us know by commenting online at kidsthesedays.org. I'm Kathleen McCoy, and Chris Reynolds and Catherine Huffman are talking with me on the program today. I thought that material was so rich that it's hard to leave it behind. You could hear in the voices of kids really what kind of education they'd already had, mm-hmm. and those mm-hmm. who had and those who had not really had. Mm-hmm. I would like to talk a little bit about the OWL program, because that might be a place where kids get some help. Let's talk mm-hmm. about that, Catherine.
That's just one example of a comprehensive sexuality education program. And comprehensive really refers to the kind of definition that Chris was talking about earlier about what sexuality means. Like, for a lot of people, they're thinking body parts
and technical terms.
Yeah. But and puberty and sex. But what we're really talking about is how sexuality is a part of who we are as human beings and our relationships, our self-concept, our communication style, how we live and move through the world, what expectations the world has of us based on our gender presentation, and all kinds of things. So OWL is a set of curricula that goes K through 12, so kindergarten through 12th grade, and there's an adult OWL as well. So kids can have an opportunity to explore age-appropriate conversations with trained mentors and work through a series of lessons and conversations. There's a kindergarten through first grade OWL that my daughter just went through. And we try to have a very open a place where we can talk about lots of different things, and we certainly have. But she came to me. She was so excited. She was like, "Mom, we can talk about, we can ask anything we want." And I'm thinking, well, that's already, you know, that's what
I was hoping you were already feeling.
I know. But, you know, it's very powerful to have other trusted adults in your community offer that.
Validate that.
She goes, "Yeah, like we can ask what the liver is." You know, I mean, just like that innocent
How do people access Al? How do they, is it in the school system or is it something you sign up for?
Right now it is offered in Anchorage through the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. It's certainly open to the community, and the cost for it is just really the cost of the books and materials and things. And so that's something that community can avail themselves of. There's a middle school and a high school OWL, an older elementary, and then the younger primary one, and then an adult one. So,
I can speak to the OWL program from a from a sexology perspective, from the community of health sex professionals, and it's a very highly regarded program.
Kids These Days is an independent production of the Content Producers Guild. We record this program at the fine studios of KSKA-FM in Anchorage, Alaska. We are online all the time at kidsthesedays.org. I'm Kathleen McCoy, and I'll be back in the second half of the hour for more discussion with my guests, Catherine Huffman and Chris Reynolds. Also still to come, we'll learn about free mail-order STD kits. That and more. Stay with us.
Come on. Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex.
Well, let's talk about sex for now. To the people at home or in the crowd, it keeps coming up anyhow. Don't decoy, avoid, or make void the topic, cause that ain't gonna stop it. Now we talk about sex on the radio and video shows.
Many will know.
Let's tell it like it is and how it could be, how it was, and of course how it should be.
Women everywhere are at risk of developing postpartum mood disorders after they give birth, and there's good reason to be aware that depression beyond the baby blues can be a serious concern. Next time on Kids These Days, we explore how Alaskan families can get help when they're in need. Also this hour, we'll meet a new KTD contributor who shares a dad's perspective on this subject. We're back. You're listening to Kids These Days on this listener-supported station. I'm Kathleen McCoy hosting today. Shanna Sheehy will be back next week. With me to discuss our topic, sex and sexuality, are Chris Reynolds and Catherine Huffman. Before we return to our conversation, let's hear this. Whether or not teens make the choice to engage in safe sexual relationships, there is always the risk of contracting a sexually transmitted disease after intercourse. Getting tested and treated for an STD can be as easy as visiting a local public health clinic. But what if you're too shy to be seen in person, live in an area not served by a local clinic, or simply can't get a ride? John Hopkins University and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention introduced a mail-order STD test kit in 2004 on the East Coast to much success among teens and young people. Now the program has come to Alaska, offering another way for this state's youth to know their STD status. Sarah Gonzalez has the story.
Infectious disease specialist Dr. Charlotte Gatiss is a professor at Johns Hopkins University. She helped to launch the mail order STD testing kit program along with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Chlamydia and gonorrhea rates were very high in Baltimore, and we realized that a lot of teenagers were starting to use the internet. And so we thought many teenagers are afraid to go to the doctor because of confidentiality and stigma and, you know, issues of privacy. And so we thought this would be a great way to reach out to teenagers to offer them to collect their own sample at home. So we set up a website and we came up with the name I Want the Kit.
Since it first started in 2004, over 3,500 kits have been requested from iwantthekit.org, and half of that number were requested by young people under the age of 23. With the success of the kits among teens and young people, the program has branched out into other states, and most recently, it's become available here in Alaska. Here, the kit is distributed through a partnership between the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, the Indian Health Service, and Johns Hopkins University. The kit tests for three of the most common STDs, chlamydia, gonorrhea, and trichomonas. In 2010, Alaska had the highest rate of chlamydia infections in the United States and ranked number two for gonorrhea rates. The bad news is that chlamydia is often undetected in those who have it. The good news is that once diagnosed, all three of these diseases are treatable.
An 8.5 by 11 envelope with no logos or anything on the outside, just addressed to that person who requested the kit. And then inside the envelope is the testing.
Lisa Ray is a nurse with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium's STD Prevention Program. She shows me a kit. Inside there is a swab for collecting a sample, a biohazard bag to seal it in, some instructions, a form to complete, and an envelope to mail it all off to the lab at Johns Hopkins, where it will be tested. Users can then call in 2 weeks later to learn their results.
We notify them about the test results. We talk with them about how they want to get treated, and you know, depending on where they are and their certain situation, whether they follow up with their regular healthcare provider, whether they need a referral for treatment. So we will work with them on that. If we also ask if they're having symptoms and need to be seen right away, and we encourage them to get tested for other STDs, and including HIV testing as well.
The mail order model is especially relevant to a state like Alaska with a large rural population, where getting to a clinic to be tested can be difficult or expensive. Plus, living in a small town where everyone knows everyone can be a barrier to getting tested, says Paula Drake, a program associate at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium's STD Prevention Program.
I think this is a wonderful program for Alaska, because the majority of Alaska is rural areas. And just from my own personal growing up in Hoonah, Alaska, I was related to the health aid. And so I know that a program like this would have helped, or would have been more enticing for my friends and I to use if we needed, because I don't think there was any way that we were going to go to the health aid. I think that one of our biggest battles in STD prevention is the negative stigma that comes with getting tested and how people perceive what that means about themselves if they're, even if it's just them going in for routine testing. They feel that negative stigma and perceive it as something, meaning something bad about me. This makes it more comfortable for a lot of our patients. And here in Alaska, it costs a lot of money to travel. So to get to Anchorage, to get here to where bigger healthcare facilities are, so a lot of people don't do routine care because it costs too much to get somewhere. In this situation, they get to go online or call and get a kit sent to them, and they get to do treatment at home.
Since August, Paula has sent out 600 informational packages to schools and health centers all over the state to spread the word about the free kits, and so far, the response has been encouraging.
In the last couple weeks, I've had a few youth centers call and want more information about it so that they can help their teenagers and their adolescents that are in various different programs get online and order these kits.
The Tribal Health Consortium also administers iKnowMine.org. It's a website intended for teens to learn about healthy sexuality. Youth can also order the kit there, request free condoms, and read and share stories with other teens online. This peer education model of teens talking to teens goes a long way when talking about sex, STD prevention, testing, and treatment. 17-year-old Johnny leads a team of teenage educators at the downtown Anchorage Power Teen Center. He knows a lot about the value of peer-to-peer education because he spends his afternoons doing exactly that.
We teach teens about different things like building healthy relationships, drugs, STIs, all different kinds of things like that. So they kind of find out by us teaching them that, and then we tell them who we are, what we do. We also do outreach, so we go to all the teen hotspots around town. We find where the teens are, and we give them our referral cards. We give them whatever that, we ask them if they need anything. We ask them if they need any referral or anything, and we tell them, we give them our card, tell them who we are, what we do.
The Power Teen Center is located in the 6th Avenue Transit Center in downtown Anchorage. It's a place for teens to go just to hang out. There are snacks, movies, video games, and teen educators like Johnny on staff. Youth can also take advantage of a full range of reproductive care services, including free STD and pregnancy testing done by a nurse 3 days a week. A counselor is on staff to talk to teens who need emotional support. The center says it's able to help about 50 teens every week. With 1 out of 5 sexually active teens in Alaska reporting that they do not use condoms, according to the latest Youth Risk Behavior Survey, Power Teen Center staff say they welcome the mail order kit as another way for young people to have access to testing.
I think that of all the people that just don't come in and get tested because they're scared, I think that it'll help that percentage a lot.
Heather Harris is the adult director of the center. She thinks the kit is a great first step for young people choosing to take responsibility for their sexual health, but there's a lot of value in face-to-face care too.
Coming into the center is helpful because then they can get a full pregnancy test at the same time and talk about their reproductive health care in general. Having that public health nurse to walk through all of the other things that a teen might not be thinking about is really important as well. And so I just encourage youth that are using the mail-in system, it's a great first step. Just know that it's a first step and there's more to it. And so just to continue that healthcare for themselves.
Johnny reminds the teens that he encounters to get tested every 3 months if they are sexually active. Whether using the kit or being seen in person, it would seem that teenagers' access to STD testing methods in Alaska is on the upswing. I'm Sarah Gonzalez.
Order a kit at iwantthekit.org and visit iknowmine.org to learn more about sexual health, testing, and resources in Alaska. We'll, of course, link you to these resources and to the Power Teen Center from kidsthesedays.org. So, Catherine and Chris, what about those STD numbers for teens in Alaska?
Well, they've been very high and of concern for many years. And what Sarah discovered in her report was that there's some gaps in service in Alaska because of our geography and because of the small communities and the relationships there. And
so everybody knows everybody.
You want it to feel private. Yeah. And even if the healthcare professionals are very clear about their confidentiality, the perception of the teen is what's important. So
this is very empowering mm-hmm. for a teen to sort of take responsibility for their own health,
sure,
at least to start that process.
Absolutely. I think that's a really important component of this story because, to me, it's about our teens becoming more sophisticated in their ability to be caring about their sexuality, including responsibility taking, including honoring that part of who they are, their sexual selves. And when we know that if we help kids grow up knowing that their sexuality is a great thing, a wonderful thing, a powerful thing, then they will take care of it. Mm-hmm. And if we raise them in a sexually anxious environment, we shouldn't be surprised when they manifest that as adults.
Mm. I have a question about boys and girls. Do they approach their sexuality at different, do they get comfortable with their sexuality at different ages? If you have a daughter, are there suggestions about how you talk to your daughter if you have a son? Should dad talk to the boys? Should mom talk to the girls? Mm. What are some of those? Let's unpack some of that.
A hotly debated topic in sex
education. I've got
education.
A little myth I just want to challenge. One of the myths floating around there is that boys don't need this information as much as girls. And we notice that parents seem less likely to talk with sons about making good decisions about sex and how to develop healthy and loving relationships, but they need it just as much. Mm-hmm. So what have you noticed in your family practice?
I'd agree with what you said. And in some of the statistics that we see about violent crimes and sexuality and the sexual indiscretions that are made, men often take the front page in those statistics, and it's a real shame. And for me, when I see people in a clinical environment who might be coming in to address those kinds of things, I tell you, it never fails that the motivation behind significant mistake-making is always something that is a very real human motivation. I was lonely. I was disenfranchised. I was confused. people who have a hard time manifesting what all of us could join with as a very important, real human need. And so it really breaks my heart when I see the statistics about how boys get less sex education than girls, even though all of them could use more.
And want more
because it really results in these kinds of sexual indiscretions that we see and then look very intolerable to us.
I think some things that Chris was talking about boys and the very real emotional human pieces that they're going through as they perhaps make poor choices about their relationships. One of the things that we're noticing there's more data behind is that it's very important to address sexism and heterosexism or making assumptions about people based on their gender or their orientation. And that's not just a human rights sort of issue. We also see it as a preventive measure for preventing sexual abuse and assault. For perpetrators are less likely to become perpetrators if their experience around their gender and the expectations for them are broader. So we see in families and communities that have very strict roles that males and females must play in order to be accepted, we see a much higher rate of sexual abuse that happens.
Well, today we're talking about normal, healthy sexual development in relationships and how to talk to our kids about them. But one thing that's not healthy that we've talked about a little bit, the high rates of sexual assault and domestic violence in Alaska. So now a group of Alaskans is working to make respect and nonviolence a part of the conversation coaches and other mentors have with young people, especially boys. Our regular contributor Jessica Cochran has more.
When Coach John Blasco started the basketball program at Juneau's new high school, he included a new element as part of the Thunder Mountain team's training.
It's called Coaching Boys into Men, and it's a 12-week program that addresses different issues with young men in high school in terms of peer pressure, peer violence, respect for women, using non-derogatory language when talking with each other regarding women. It's kind of a full spectrum of covering, I guess, challenges that teenage boys face in today's society. And it's how the coaches can address these challenges and get them to think in a positive manner when dealing with violence in women.
He started using Coaching Boys into Men after seeing some of the issues that came up with his team. The Aware Shelter in Juneau was also looking for someone to try the national program and its materials to see how it worked. The program includes a playbook and cards with different activities, and it shows coaches how to build on teachable moments, like hearing boys refer to girls as hot and talking about more appropriate ways to talk and think about their female peers. Blasco has been impressed with the results. In his second year of coaching, the boys on the team asked the first week of practice when he would start coaching them into men. It turns out they really wanted to do it, and he witnessed the changes in their behavior.
After each week that we covered a topic, kids started catching each other, whether it be on the van ride up in Anchorage or be in the gym at practice or at games. They would catch each other on things that were said or comments that were made that weren't appropriate or didn't fit the Coaching Boys into Men guidelines. And they started correcting each other on them in a very positive manner and started implementing team kind of, I guess I'll call them rules, that I had nothing to do with, but they started doing them themselves in terms of not swearing and how they talked about their girlfriends.
Now Blasco is part of a project by the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault to come up with an Alaska-specific guide or toolkit for anyone who works with or mentors boys, not only coaches. Lori Grassgreen is head of prevention efforts for the network.
What's clear is that there are a lot of folks, whether they're coaches or just community members, that are looking for tools to make sure that young men are succeeding and are healthy and understand concepts around respect and ending violence.
Grassgreen isn't sure yet exactly how the guide will be structured or what it will be called. Creating it is a statewide community effort. There are 27 members of the working group, representing different regions and perspectives. But she says one desire is for a program that gets at some of the deeper questions. Why choose a nonviolent path? What are your values when it comes to respect?
That strengths-based piece is really important because it's not just about what you shouldn't do. It's really about who you want to become. I don't think many of us start off in life thinking, oh, we want to, be violent, or we want to be disrespectful, or we want to be disconnected from our community. But it's really about knowing how to show respect, how to be connected, how to know who you are.
The graphics will look and feel more Alaskan than national programs and incorporate quotes, stories, and other elements that take into account Alaska's varied cultures. That's one thing Alan Hayton is working on. He's a Gwich'in instructor at UAF, studying for his master's in linguistics. He was one of the facilitators at a two-day meeting held in Anchorage in June to get the project going. He's searching out traditional stories to include in the project. He recalls learning about respect while growing up in Arctic Village.
I remember when I was young, my uncle had hunted and brought home a beaver. And there it was in my grandmother's house, and he told us very specifically to watch how we speak around this beaver, to not speak disrespectfully or swear or make loud noises, and even metal sounds might disturb the spirit of this beaver that was still in its body. If you don't respect that animal, then it won't offer itself to you in the future. And I think you could take it in many different ways. You could say literally that that's what's happening. Or it could be also like a strategy or elders would use to teach young people. Because during that time, at least, they're being careful of what they say and they're respecting each other. And, raising that awareness of respect within that young person.
Lori Grassgreen says they're now in the process of writing the content for the different sections, sending it out to the group for suggestions and revisions and incorporating them. She hopes to have the guide or toolkit done in a year or so, so that those people who have been asking for help in their work with young men will have some ideas on hand when the moments arise. I'm Jessica Cochran.
I'm Kathleen McCoy, your host today. Chris Reynolds and Catherine Huffman join me today on Kids These Days to talk about good parent-child communication when it comes to talking about sex. Well, I have a question for you that we haven't really tackled yet, and it is, what if your child feels they're ready for sex or is having sex? How does that change your conversation with your child?
I think the most important thing to do is to recognize that we get a vote regarding our kids' sexuality, but we don't get to determine our kids' sexuality. And so the first way that it might shape that conversation is in recognizing that at the end of the day, these are emerging adults. They are not adults yet. They still need guidance. They still need lots of input from us. But at the end of the day, the data shows, the kids tell us they're going to do what they're going to do. Our role is to vote. Our role is to be involved. For me, it starts with being an askable parent. Ask questions. Be someone they can talk to. And when we've completed that process well, cast your vote. Say what you need to say. Respond from within your value system. And I think that's the best we can do.
I wondered, is it all right for parents to say, I know you don't agree with me, but I'm going to let you know how I feel. Mm-hmm. Is that important to say that?
We really encourage parents to share their values with their children, because what you're trying to help them build their capacity to navigate through these issues. And so understanding what your parents' values are about sensitive issues, including sexuality, helps build your toolkit on where your boundaries are and helps you navigate them a little bit better. So we encourage that, but we also want to make sure that teens can always come back to their parents and share with them what they've been doing. Sometimes I hear stories from teens where parents have been super clear that sex outside of marriage is not what they expect. And so on one side, professionally, I really support parents sharing that value what their family expectations are about that. But I really hope that there's a way for that teen who has chosen to have sex anyway to be able to talk to their parents about it. I've heard stories about teens who then shut off all communication with their parents because they are so agonized by the disappointment that they anticipate they'll hear from their parents.
Which actually points out how important that relationship is.
Yes.
So important that they won't tell them something they think will disappoint them.
And then it isolates that teen. So I don't know that there's a parent out there who wouldn't want to be able to help their teen stay safe and healthy. And so there has to be a way to bridge that gap.
Do you think it's okay for parents to say, this is how I feel about it. I don't want you to have sex before you're older or you're married. But if you do, I want you to talk to me about it. Is that something they should say?
Absolutely. I don't think that's a contradictory message for us to be able to say, these are my values, and you are an emerging adult. You will choose your own values. And but the question that you asked was, how does the conversation change if they tell us they're having sex? And we should mention that that of course that brings up some specific healthcare issues, and it's important to give that a voice in the conversation, whether they want to hear it or not. Hopefully in a joining way, but if not, in a you need to know this way.
Well, and part of that is teens recognizing what their rights are around sexual health information and access to care. In Alaska, teens are able to consent for themselves, getting methods of birth control. Really, all FDA-approved methods of birth control are available to teens. And there's not really an age cutoff designated in the Alaska state statutes. So what that means is that teens can go in and get chlamydia tests and HIV tests and treatment for those infections. They can get pregnancy tests. They can then receive pregnancy options counseling if there is a pregnancy. And then the teens can make that decision legally. That decision. Now we hope that they're making that decision in concert with supportive adults in their lives, their trusted family adults. But we understand it's the teen's decision who to involve with that, with the exception of the choice of abortion, which this past December, the law shifted to require parental notification for teens under 18 who feel like abortion is their best choice in that matter. They can, they're required to have their parent be notified of that, and if they feel like they're not able to do that, then they're able to seek out a judicial bypass for that. So it's not parental consent, it's notification.
Notification. Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of information on this program, and that's all the time we have for today. I want to thank each of you for spending time with me on Kids These Days. Catherine Huffman trains educators, nurses, counselors, and child care providers on sexuality and healthy sexual development. Chris Reynolds is an Anchorage licensed professional counselor and is one of two certified sex therapists in Alaska. Thank you both for coming and sharing so much information with us today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kathleen.
As always, we will link you to the resources mentioned on the show throughout the hour. Simply go to our website, kidsthesedays.org, and connect from there. Be sure to check back during the week. We'll post web extras and link you to additional resources there as well. Hey Kids 10 to 20, be sure to tell us what you think about being a kid these days by entering our essay contest by October 21st. Winners will read their work on the air. All details are online at our website. Kids These Days had help today from Kelsey Hernandez and Robert Stormo at the Alaska Teen Media Institute. Jessica Cochran reported from Anchorage and is our assistant producer and technical editor. Shanna Shee is this show's regular host. Sarah Gonzalez is our producer and webmaster. I'm Kathleen McCoy. Thanks for joining me today on Kids These Days. See you next time.
The ideas, opinions, and commentary you hear on Kids These Days are those of the hosts, guests, and contributors, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of its funders or broadcast partners. The Content Producers Guild is solely responsible for what you hear on the program. Kids These Days is made possible by a generous grant from the Association of Alaska School Boards and its Initiative for Community Engagement. Kids These Days is produced in partnership with KSKA 91.1 FM Anchorage, KRUA, and the UAA Department of Journalism and Public Communications.